It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We examine the realities of working class Americans, a grim assessment of income inequality and democracy, its views from the longest serving independent in the history of Congress, Bernie Sanders. His latest book is called It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. Join in with questions. Add your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. John Nichols is an associate editor at the Capital Times in Madison, contributor to The Nation and the Progressive magazines, co-author of this book with Senator Sanders. John, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Kate, it's an honor to be with you.
Good morning. So lay it out for us, the premise here. What is wrong with American capitalism?
Well, lots wrong. And one of the basic premises that we start with is that capitalism exists, and it will probably continue to exist for a very long time. The question is how you organize it, whether you organize it primarily to enrich a handful of people, a billionaire class and the CEOs of multinational corporations, for instance, or do you organize it in a way that is beneficial to the great mass of Americans? The reality that we drive home, I think, again and again in each chapter of the book is that currently it is organized in a way that effectively redistributes wealth upwards. Working class people create a great deal of wealth in this country. They do the work. They show up even in pandemics, even in the most difficult of circumstances. And yet many of them still struggle to get by. So you still have people who are living on a minimum wage in this country. And you have an awful lot of people who lack adequate health care, adequate housing, just the basics of life. And what we argue is that with a fair tax system, with a fairer distribution of wealth in this country, we could all be better off, overwhelmingly so. And so our argument is it's okay to be angry about capitalism. In fact, what we suggest is that people are very divided right now and very angry about a lot of issues. But too frequently, they turn their anger on one another. They turn their anger on particular groups or particular organizations that they don't like. And they miss the reality that it is the current organization of our economic system that creates so much of the despair, the frustration, the sense of disenfranchisement that we have in our country.
Something that is chilling to me is, you know, Sanders feels the uber capitalist society is immoral and draws some parallels between the oligarchy of Russia and oligarchs, he calls them, of the U.S. Do we have some things in common with Russia?
Well, we're very different than Russia in a lot of ways, both in our history and in our current organization. But the reality of oligarchy is something that exists around the world. We've talked a lot, media-wise and others, about the oligarchy in Russia. But we should understand that many countries around the world have oligarchs. These are people who are incredibly powerful and use their power not just to enrich themselves economically through good business practices or through, you know, successful organization of their wealth, but politically. They move to make sure that the political system is organized in a way that allows them to become dramatically wealthier because the rules are essentially bent in their favor. And I think that anybody who takes a serious look at our campaign finance system in the United States and at lobbying in Washington, D.C., will tell you that, yes, there are very, very wealthy people who effectively use their wealth to gain a greater control over our political system. That's oligarchy. And it may operate in different ways. In this country, it may operate in a different way. In the United Kingdom, it may operate a different way. In Germany, it may operate a different way. In Russia. But the bottom line is we should stop denying this reality. We should accept the reality that because we have allowed very, very wealthy people to have a dramatic influence on our politics, we have ended up with rules and laws and policies that benefit those very, very wealthy people rather than the great mass of Americans.
Let's turn to healthcare. Senator Sanders, the signature issue in his push for a single-payer healthcare system or Medicare for all, do you see any movements happening in national politics to expect such a system would ever be realized, would ever take form?
Well, it has to be realized and it has to take form. At some point, it will. It's just a question of how soon. And the interesting thing is that during the pandemic, when we had a sweeping health crisis and challenges facing people across the country, and folks are really overwhelmed, if you look at what Congress did, it moved in many ways toward a national healthcare plan. It didn't obviously implement one. But what did we do? We said, oh, yeah, we're going to get you the vaccines for free. We're going to try and get you the tests for free. We're going to try and do all these things that make it easier for you to access healthcare. We're going to knock down a lot of the barriers. And that was a critical part of the pandemic response. And so what's interesting is that as a society, when we have a crisis, we say, oh, we need a national healthcare plan. We need something much more akin to a single payer Medicare for all type plan. But then when the crisis eases, we suddenly see all the lobbyists come back in, all the powerful campaign contributors come back in. And remember, the healthcare industry is and the pharmaceutical industry are incredibly powerful influences on our politics. And they say, okay, let's shut down whatever we did. Let's go back to the way it was.
Snaps back. I'm going to reintroduce you, veteran political journalist John Nichols, co-author of U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders' latest book, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. Call in with questions, comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the tough questions U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders believes Americans and Wisconsinites need to discuss, frankly, in these times. The book is called It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. Call in with questions. What's on your mind? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. John Nichols, contributor to The Nation and the Progressive magazines, wrote the book with Senator Sanders. John, let's talk about young voters. Sanders received support from younger voters in his two presidential campaigns. Why does a senator appeal to younger people?
Well, that's a question a lot of political scientists have wrestled with, but I don't think it's actually that complex. Young people tend to come into this political system with a lot of frustrations and legitimate frustrations. They look at a economic system that seems to be stacked against him, not just in the workplace where young folks have harder times getting jobs and when they do get jobs, get less pay, but also as regards just the education process. So many young people carry immense amounts of debt as a result of their efforts to get college degrees and advanced degrees. And so when they come into the system, they're effectively pressured to take jobs that they often don't want to take. So you've got all of these factors coming into play. And then along comes Bernie Sanders as a national contender, one of the first in recent years, certainly, who said bluntly that the system is flawed, that it doesn't work, and that it is, in fact, as young people, I think, often believe, stacked against them. And so there was a powerful response to this. And one of the things that we write a lot about in the book is the influence that the campaigns of 2016 and 2020 had on young people. This is certainly one of the things that I think excites the senator the most. Many of the people who campaigned for him back in 2016 then turned around and became candidates themselves. And I think that's one of the things that Sanders showed, is that you can come from the outside, you can be an independent, you can be a democratic socialist, you can be someone who, you know, certainly hasn't always been treated with respect by the media, and you can still break into politics. You can make it. And so people who have said they were influenced by Senator Sanders to get into politics include folks like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is now one of the most prominent political figures in the country. And there's hundreds and hundreds of other folks around the country who fit that model. And again, I think that's something that really excites the senator.
There are harsh words for the Democratic Party that it's abandoned middle-class people in favor of wealthy campaign contributions in favor of, quote, the beautiful people. How did Democrats lose so many of these voters?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons for that. One of the factors that we examine a bit in the book is the presidency of Bill Clinton. And it's important to understand that when Bill Clinton was president of the United States, he broke with organized labor on the issue of free trade and supported deals like NAFTA and most favored nation trading status for China. That had a huge impact on working people, especially in industrial states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania. And at the same time, he supported banking reforms, getting rid of Glass-Steagall and things like that, that were very, very damaging to an organizing of an economy that would be beneficial for the great mass of people. And so, frankly, a lot of working class people looked at the Democratic Party and saw a party that seemed to be more deferent to, you know, Hollywood or more deferent to Wall Street than it was to, you know, Kenosha or Toledo. And that had a real impact on the party. It continues to have an impact. And one of the things that we argue is that until Democrats make themselves very clearly aligned with the working class and very clearly aligned with the unions that represent working class people, they're still, Democrats are still going to have a problem politically.
What about the spread of right-to-work laws? Pointing out in the book as a reason Donald Trump was elected president after two terms of Obama, what role do these right-to-work laws have in the future? Sure. You know, in helping Trump win another presidency or else?
Sure. The declining labor has a huge impact because labor unions are one of the places where people come together and talk about economics and talk about politics in a way that gives them a perspective on how to vote for their own best interests. And as unions have been weakened across the country, that has had a big impact on our politics. It's made people feel more vulnerable, more uncertain, fewer ways into the political process. And one of the encouraging things is that while you saw a lot of right-to-work laws go on the books over the last decade, even in places like Wisconsin, Michigan just recently overturned its right-to-work law and went back to a situation where working-class people can organize and effectively collectively bargain.
We're going to pause there with John Nichols, co-author of U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders' book, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders is angry about extreme inequality, wants people to be energized and do something about it. His book is called It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. And Sanders wrote it with longtime political journalist John Nichols. And you can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. John, let's focus our attention now to the future of work. The book examines how the nature of work and workplaces could change quite dramatically for Americans. Why is the future of work important for democracy?
It's central to democracy. And I think that people are not fully conscious of how dramatically work has already changed. And that what has already changed is just the beginning of a dramatic restructuring. And we talk a lot in sort of siloed conversations about the fact that more of us work from home, or the fact that many of us are working in different ways, using computers, using being online rather than on a factory floor in a warehouse, things of that nature. But what we need to recognize is that with the combination of the digital revolution, automation of workplaces, and AI technology, in 10 years, most of us will not recognize our workplaces. They will be radically different, and many of us will be forced into the gig economy, working a number of jobs rather than in a traditional position. All of this is going to be very, very beneficial to the very wealthy, because they can get workers competing with one another, especially in the gig economy, and reap tremendous benefits. Also, the rise of AI technology has tremendous potential to make those who have control over it and those who develop it incredibly wealthy. But it doesn't necessarily guarantee that working class people will be better off. And so this is where the small d democratic question comes in. Who will control decisions about the new technologies and about the changes of our workplace? What Senator Sanders and I argue is that that needs to be much more in the purview of working class people, of people who vote in elections rather than people who sit around a corporate board table. And we reference a lot what's happening in other countries. In Germany, for instance, they're now deep into repeated studies and reorganizations of their social service networks, of their employment laws and other things to get ready for these changes that are taking place and to make sure that the working class people are not left out. That's not happening in America. And we frankly need to really ramp up the planning and frankly, the democratizing of decisions about this digital revolution, about automation and about AI technology.
Right. Technology was supposed to cut down the amount of hours that people have to put in. It was supposed to make jobs easier. That hasn't happened.
No, not at all. In fact, one of the things that we found is that technology, it makes us kind of pressured to do more. Right. And it also restructures our relationship with work. So many people who are, you know, checking their emails at home, checking on their phone. And we see it also even beyond work in the impact that it has on young people and their kind of, you know, deep connection with technology, sometimes in very, very good ways, but also sometimes in ways that are detrimental. And so, again, as a society, we should be talking about this. We shouldn't leave decisions about, you know, what technologies come into play and how they are applied simply to the corporations that develop them, because multinational corporations will seek to use that technology to make themselves and their shareholders wealthier. That's not a crazy notion. That's something we all understand. And yet we aren't addressing it. And the way to address it is through democracy. It's through saying that we, the people, have a right to elect officials who are free from, you know, the lobbying money, the campaign finance issues, and are free to actually represent us and to frankly make laws and make regulations that are designed to assure that, yes, we develop new technologies, that we bring them into play, but that we don't do so simply to enrich a handful of people, that we make sure that technology really does realize that promise of making our lives easier and frankly, allowing us to work less rather than more.
You bring up an example of a potential regulation in robot tax revenues, yes. And you advocate for robot tax. How would this type of tax work in practice?
No, it's really pretty simple. Robotification is replacing a lot of workers in industrial settings, and that's not necessarily bad. There are many, you know, jobs that are really frustrating and difficult jobs, and a robot can do them well. But as companies make the choice to automate their facilities, be they warehouses, factories, stores, whatever, there ought to be at least some pressure on them to make that decision with respect for their existing workers and respect for workers in the future. A robot tax simply says that, you know, if you're going to go and have a robot, you're going to have to pay some taxes on that. You're going to have to move some money into the system, just as if you have a human employee, right? You're paying Social Security taxes and other you know, benefits and things of that nature. And so we just want to equalize the playing field so that robotification doesn't force workers, you know, out of the job to the great benefit, perhaps, of a few CEOs and stockholders, but doesn't necessarily benefit society. We have to, as a society, think about what people are going to do in the future. And some of that can be addressed by lowering the number of work hours, going to a 32-hour week and things like that. But some of them have to recognize that with automation, there are going to be some radical changes. And as those radical changes occur, we have to make sure that, frankly, government and political forces have the ability to protect and hopefully benefit the great mass of working class people.
Journalist John Nichols with us, contributor to U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders' new book, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. Let's turn to Sanders, 81 years old, in recent hours has endorsed Biden, ruled out a 2024 bid of his own. What is his legacy for American politics?
Well, I think it's as yet somewhat unwritten because he continues to serve in a very powerful position as the chairman of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee.
Yes.
Which really gets to the heart of a lot of the work he's done throughout his career. But I do think that we can say that one of the huge aspects of his legacy, something that isn't going to go away, is this inspiration of a new generation of young people to go into politics, right? And to see politics as something that isn't just about parties and personalities, that is about fundamental issues. And it is this introduction of a concept of economic democracy, that we have political democracy without a question, although it's often embattled. But the real debate is whether we are going to have economic democracy. And that is, can we, the people, through our votes, elect officials and have an impact on the direction of government in a way to make sure that it is organized to benefit working class people, not just the handful of very wealthy billionaires and CEOs. And I think Sanders, to a greater extent than anybody in certainly modern times, reintroduced the concept of economic democracy. It was a concept that Franklin Roosevelt talked a lot about at a time when the Democratic Party was, you know, riding very high politically. And it is one that I would argue this country needs to be reintroduced to. And I think Sanders has done that to a large extent.
Do you see politicians continuing his message, continuing his type of work? What is that future? What is that handoff?
Yes, that is a very good question, Kate. And the truth of the matter is, Sanders is a unique figure coming out of a very small state with a very big personality. And over time, over more than 50 years in politics, has ultimately had a profound impact. And now there are going to be other folks coming up. You certainly have seen the influence of people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and members of the Squad. They've shown that young people can come in and have a big impact on our politics. And I think that obviously the 2024 presidential election looks to be shaping up as kind of a repeat election, perhaps Biden against Trump once more. But as you move toward 2028, I think things are really going to open up and you're going to see a lot of people stepping up politically. In fact, one of the co-chairs of Bernie Sanders' 2020 campaign, Ro Khanna, a congressman from California, was very up on these tech issues and others, is already making sounds like he might run. And I think you'll see other people run in that Sanders legacy, in that Sanders tradition. I don't think that Sanders' influence is going to go away anytime soon.
But here's the rub. People who are eking by, scraping by, 2028 is eons away when you're living paycheck to paycheck.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And people should be impatient. Just as they should be angry about capitalism, they should be impatient for change. And that's going to be a place where I think that in the short term, if President Biden is reelected and he's got a Democratic Congress, which is not guaranteed by any means, but if he does, there has to be a lot of pressure. One of the mistakes that I think progressives make is that when a Democrat gets elected, they think, oh, well, that individual is going to handle the problems. We can do other things. That doesn't make any sense. What made Franklin Roosevelt a progressive president, not always, he was very flawed in many ways, but what made him a better president was the fact that there was a very strong labor movement, that there was very strong people's movements that put tremendous pressure on him to do things like develop Social Security, implement better labor laws, basically develop many, many better economic systems in the country. That pressure has to be on Democrats as well as Republicans. It's silly to think that just electing Democrats is sufficient to solve problems. There has to be, a movement from outside pushing them to do the right thing.
John Nichols, thank you for joining us.
It's a total pleasure, and I hope people give lots to the WPR fundraising drive.
Appreciate it. John Nichols, contributor to Bernie Sanders' new book, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism, published this year. Nichols is a contributor to The Nation and the Progressive Magazine's associate editor for Madison's Cap Times. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.